education. And as you can see from the charts that we have there, we'd better be, because participation of individuals, we have here some figures related to the stock market. So individuals involved in direct investment in the market, the numbers have been growing. Investment clubs, which are products directed to investors and almost close to direct investment, have also been growing in these last years. The actual amounts that these investors, individuals, and investment clubs have been trading in the markets is that curve that you see growing. And these newcomers, they are more risk-prone. We have been seeing the research done by the stock exchange on their profile, and that's exposed there. So I guess we certainly need to look at that reality and step up our efforts. Also, there's a number of potential new investors that are going to come to the market, and of course for very good reasons, very positive changes that have been happening in our country. You see a large part of the population coming out of poverty and getting into income brackets that will on time allow them to save and invest. And so I guess the case for investor education on the perspective, limited perspective of a securities regulator is clear for us. Don't try to look at all the details in this chart, but only at the final number. We got this estimate made for us on a study that was conducted looking at the transformation in the income distribution in the country and the type of products available. And there's this estimate of 4.4 million new investors coming in the next few years to invest directly in the market. So I guess the case for investor education is very clear, but we believe, and we believed that a few years ago, that we should go a step further and try to lead an effort to build a national strategy for financial education in broader terms, as you know. Because we believe changes in income distribution are going to last, fortunately, and their effects are going to impact demand for financial products in the long term. And in every corner of the markets. And these newcomers are basically financially illiterate. They will need, before investing, they will need much more basic information to be able to take informed decisions on their investments. And we don't want them to take decisions based on herd behavior or poor advice. Of course, the costs of not doing that are big for the individuals in case, and of course for the regulator and supervisor anyway in the end. Because enforcement costs can raise with the growth in the number of investors that are not prepared to consider very well what they are doing before doing it in the market. Number of complaints, scams, frauds, etc., are a big risk. Besides that, a national strategy, and especially if it's based on a broad concert of efforts public and private. It can really reach the population at in large scale and at a very early stage, even in schools. I believe that's a value that no single regulator could bring to a program of education. As I said, financial education will be important and is the basis for any informed investment decision. We believe the best way to address issues related to the behavior of investors is through an umbrella involving other. Oh, there's someone here. Involving other actors, because the skills that are needed to prepare an investor, an informed investor, conscient, diligent, are not pertinent only to a specific sector in the financial market. We've been doing some steps in that direction. First, focused only on investor education, and then since 2007, through a committee that gathers the capital markets regulators, us, the central bank, the insurance, and the pension regulators, we've launched an effort to design a plan and a draft of this national strategy was ready in 2009. Based on that draft, and of course with the support of some private partners, entities of the market, our self-regulatory organizations, we've been starting with the pilot part of what's going to be a strategy. It's still not implemented. I'll say a little bit about that following. The national strategy itself was approved in the end of last year, and recently, last week, the members of what is going to be a National Council of Financial Education were appointed. This council is composed of government bodies, finance ministry, the four regulators, Ministry of Education, and Ministry of Justice, where Consumer Protection Department is established, and is also going to be composed of the private partners of the financial strategy. This board is going to be only a strategic level direction, and is going to say, give guidance on the implementation of the strategy and follow up on the results and make sure that public interest is placed in the first place and that the strategy is respected. And the actual implementation is, as the plans now go, is going to be done through a private association funded by the SROs and the banking association. They have already committed to put resources on that foundation. That's a good solution for our case. I don't know if it would be for any case. Public monies are not available, and agility also would be a problem if we were to invest public monies on this type of initiative. And fortunately, we could find partners in the private sector to run the initiative, to operationalize it. But we believe it's necessary, and now addressing some of the questions that the panel puts to us, it's necessary to ensure that some principles are respected. It's not about financial inclusion in this case, so we are not interested in increasing the demand for any financial service or product, and it's only information. it was interesting to listen to you now and see that you already are one step ahead. You believe information even is not enough, or education is not enough. Information should be given at the time of the decision, and that's something for us to consider in our strategy too, as maybe a development. We've done the script as Florian recommended. First, a national inventory of financial education initiatives in the country, and there were 70 that were found. Then a survey on financial literacy to see what would be the problems to be addressed. Then a website where this work is ready for consultation and where the strategy is going to be placed very shortly. And then we established, and this is kind of already implementing, but the opportunity was there. Some private partners were ready to fund the initiative, and we decided to go on even without the institutionality of the strategy being ready. So we established a pedagogical support group with financial regulators and education professionals. And at that time we got, and that I guess is one of the strengths of this program, the Ministry of Education on board. In the beginning they were very wary, very concerned that we would be helping the sharks to sell more products to the students, and they needed to protect them from that. And that was really the climate in the beginning, but they found out finally, eventually, that it was about citizenship and empowerment, and they are with us on that, and it's really an achievement. And we are already implementing, as I said, a pilot project on schools. On 5 states of Brazil, it involves 900 schools, high schools, 20,000 students, around 27,000 students. The process involves 2 stages, the education, the information provision itself, and impact evaluation on the financial behavior of 2 groups. Half of those schools and students will be the target of the program, and the other half is going to be only the control group. And this program of assessment is being funded with the help of the World Bank. These are the numbers that we have for both situation treatment and control group, and the number of cities involved, schools involved, I guess one other good feature of this process is the fact that we are being able to plan ahead for the impact assessment and design the program as ready to be evaluated so that we can develop the rest of the strategy on safer grounds, let's say. So the impact evaluation is gonna evaluate financial knowledge and behavior of the students in 2 phases. One short and medium term assessment, and so in August 2010, last year, the students and their parents responded a questionnaire, and it's gonna be repeated in the end of 2012, this year. Long term, 5 years from the beginning of the program, we are going to do the same procedure, and trying to track possible changes. For that purpose, we had to provide IRS numbers for each student, 27 youngsters, and that's in itself a major difficulty, a logistical difficulty, you can imagine. Next steps, we will have a workshop to present this pilot project assessment with the World Bank in São Paulo, and still in the first semesters, semester of this year, we'll have the workshop with the parents of the schools, of the students of the treatment group. Thank you, sorry for the time.
Maria, thank you very much. We've now concluded the presentations. We started a bit late. I'm very keen that we finish on time, but I will allow two or three questions. So over to you. And as you think about whether or not you want to ask a question, it's very clear that there's complete unanimity here amongst the panelists that consumer education is a national necessity. You know, very clear unanimity, but there may be some members of the audience who may have a different view. If you have, you know, we'd like to hear from you. So are there any questions? There's a hand. We'll take two or three questions. There's a hand right in the back there. Where else? There's a hand over there. So that's two. And then we'll just take one more. We'll just take one more and then we can conclude.
Yes. Yes. Should I start?
Yeah. Yes, please.
Yes, my name is Charles Müller. I'm from the Luxembourg Fund Industry Association. My son, who is 15, came home, and he had just learned the difference between the front and the back legs of the spider, which is very interesting. At the same day, he had received a letter from a bank telling him that he was 15, and it was probably a good time to start having a bank account, having a debit card, having all sorts of very nice things. And my son knew a lot about spiders, but nothing about bank accounts. So my first question perhaps would be for the panelists, do you have any statistics that show that when you get the investors or the consumers early, like in school, that will really increase financial literacy if there are nationwide education programs at school? I would be interested to know about that. And then with my son, I tried then to teach him a little bit. And the problem is that financial education is unbelievably boring. Trying to make it interesting, I think, perhaps having a song or having a competition, what I found finally is a Disney game called The Big Financial Adventures of Piggy Bank. But how would you can you make it interesting so that you interest people in keeping the mind at it and not starting wandering off, especially with children, after 2 or 3 minutes?
Thank you very much. We've noted the question. Can we take the other two questions?
Hello? Yes. My affiliation is with the International Swaps and Derivatives Association. And my question is, my comment and question is, I don't think I heard the word risk, at least I didn't hear it several times. Is risk a four-letter word in this context, particularly in the current political environment? Because isn't that the heart of the issue? Risk appetite?
Okay. Thank you very much. Also a very good question. So that question is noted. And then the last question.
Hello. Okay. I'm Aziz from Indonesian Securities and Exchange Commission. I have a question for the second panelist from the UK. Looking at a current financial reforms in UK financial markets, whereby you are about to restructure again your financial sector supervisory frameworks, in which one of them is to establish what you are going to call as a UK Consumer Protection Agency that will continue the functions carried out before by the FSA. I would like to have your views or observations on how this kind of newly structure or regimes will contribute towards better and more effective consumer protection regime in UK financial markets.
Thank you very much. I think in the interest of time, that question is noted. Thank you. In the interest of time, we will leave the questions there. I'm now going to turn to the panelists to address those questions, and we will conclude. So any one of the panelists, there are three questions. Gerard, you have to take the question, obviously. Can we start with the last question because it was specifically directed to you?
Yes, I certainly can. I mean, I do think, as I said, that consumer financial education has to be seen as part of the regulatory architecture or the regulatory ecology, and that's where we sit. And I didn't have time to go into it, but I'm appointed by the FSA, and in future my successors will be appointed by the Financial Conduct Authority. So I do think we're part of that picture, although we have an independent status and so on. It's really not for me to comment on UK government policy on the structure of financial services regulation, but it is obviously good to have a set of activities which are focused on consumers and markets, and we see ourselves very much as part of that. Do you want me to make my closing remarks at the same time, or
And this is now an instruction from me, because I'm the boss, to all the panelists. Only if it's a really compelling point that you feel has not been made, then you, all of you, as panelists, I would invite you to then.
Well,
let me
say a couple of things, and then you won't have to hear from me again. Which were responses to the questions.
Sure.
The question that the gentleman from Luxembourg asked about schools and so on. I mean, we have done a lot of work in schools in the UK, and we have evaluated it, and it gets very high satisfaction ratings from the kids, so they don't seem to find it boring, but it doesn't necessarily lead to changes in financial behavior on a longitudinal basis. So that is why we have now decided, on the basis of that research, to focus on what we're calling the transition to adulthood, of which your son is a member. So we're focusing on that because there are a number of critical financial decisions, particularly about the costs of higher education, and that's much nearer to where people take those decisions. That's number one. Number two, the question about risk. Yes, of course, that's right. I mean, the way of ensuring. We're all agreed on the need to have this financial education activity. What there is less clarity about, if I may say so, is what the most effective methods are. We're all doing lots of different things. They're all good things. The inputs are excellent, but what are the outputs? What are the outcomes? And our approach to this in deciding on methods has been to look very closely at questions of incentives to change your behavior and indeed questions of risk appetite. So I didn't mention it, but it has certainly formed part of our thinking about the health check that we're developing and where we're going next. It's very clear to us that you can spend an infinite amount of money on all kinds of inputs in this area, but unless you really address what incentives people have to change and what their appetites for risk are, you're simply, as it were, throwing the spaghetti against the wall. And then finally, last thing on evaluation, because a number of people have mentioned it, and obviously this thing has to be value for money. I mean, our evaluation of our five-year strategy was very comprehensive, and what it showed, as I said about the schools thing, was that there was a high level of satisfaction with financial education, but not much impact on future behavior. And that was the critical thing that we have sought to address. And so our new approach to evaluation is going to be much more about customer insight leading to product innovation, our own product innovation, not product innovation in the financial services industry. And we're going to be using crowdsourcing techniques of research as a way of really understanding changing behavior rather than satisfaction surveys.
Thank you very much, Gerard. Any of the other panelists on any of the two questions? Any comment? Yes, please, Maria.
Just on the risk appetite issue, I guess that's more on investor education, or in my view, it's so important that it's a point of sale practice, the suitability review that must be done, and I guess it's the best way of addressing that. So when faced with the decision to invest or not, or which product to choose, the obligation of the intermediary to assess the suitability of the product should be established and should deal with this specific issue. That's my view. I guess it's very difficult to treat that concretely and really help in the investment decision by only giving information at the level of the education effort.
Thank you very much. Any of the other panelists, any comment or observation?
Yeah, yes. If I may, I'll start with evaluation. And when we started to think about evaluation and looking at the impact of the programs on financial education, looking at whether there's an impact on behavior actually, we start thinking a little bit more about the inputs, about the methods that have been used so far when developing financial education program, and thinking about now school children. Of course, financial issue can be very boring and you will not have a great result if it's like classical theater type of education. But with more case study, with competition, with also teachers that are provided with appropriate pedagogical tools, it's true that the output are far better. Now we know that behavioral change is something we need to learn much more, and we are all in a kind of laboratory, and I think we will learn a lot from the UK experience in the future, so we are really looking forward to this particular experience.
Just to add that on the, really, you have to be quite innovative to see what you think suits, and some of it is a cultural thing. So when I talk about plays and dancing and so on, I know that the children will really respond to that. If they can see a play about somebody investing badly and going into misery and another one not investing and so on. So it's got to be quite innovative. As I said, the song, I haven't evaluated the results yet because it didn't really, it didn't hit the top 10. But but one has to be innovative and change, use different styles. Otherwise, it can be boring. But also the training of trainers, you've also get to get the teachers who are involved or the staff who is involved to really have the passion for it. But monitoring and evaluation of impact remains a very big challenge.
So thank you very much, Jeff. And I think on that note about how to make consumer education a lot more exciting, I think I will conclude. Let's just give the panelists a big round of applause. Yeah. And then if you don't mind, a big round of applause to you. I mean, you've persevered and we've come to the finish line. All right. And the last two things that I have to do really before we start handing out the gifts is just to thank Joanne. I think Joanne has done an amazing job. So thank you so much as Master of Ceremonies, right? And then the real final thing, you know, is just to thank FSB for hosting this fantastic, conference. Thanks to Dubey, to Norman, to the whole, the whole of the FSB team. And then finally, also thanks to AOSCO for bringing this conference to South Africa. So thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you so much thank to you. Our panelists. I'm going to ask our moderator, of course, Jeff, if you would be so kind as to hand over the tokens of appreciation from FSB to our panelists. Now, ladies and gentlemen, just from my side, I really enjoyed that discussion because I think it is a very, very important topic, especially when looking at the future of our youth. And I'd like to quote once again Mr. Kato. He said, "A mind is like a parachute. It only works if it's open." And I think that not only applies to financial education, but just to life in general. And I think also to us here at the conference, we had to keep our minds open because we have learned quite a lot during these last couple of days. Ladies and gentlemen, I'd also like to take this opportunity to invite Mr. Kato to maybe teach the band tonight the song. And maybe we can see about getting that song about financial education into the top 10. Should we try that? Mr. Kato and the whole panel, thank you very much for all their contributions. Now, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to give them a chance to take their seats again, but thank you so much for all your insight. I think everything that we learned today, ladies and gentlemen, during the various panel discussions are so pertinent to the future of finance worldwide. Fantastic. I think the technical guys can de-mic them after the conference. There's no next panel discussion, so I think we can move along then in terms of not de-miking them just yet, unless they wish to off the stage.
Thank you very much.
We should get a song from them tonight. No, they've got it.
Do they?
Let's give them a huge round of applause, ladies and gentlemen. Well done to them, our final panel of the day. And I must say they did very well, because it's true, it has been a very, very long day with lots of information, and they managed to keep our attention right till the very end. Now, ladies and gentlemen, I think also whilst I have your full attention, I want to say a big thank you once again to all our sponsors. We know without their generosity, this whole event would not have been possible. So a big thank you to ASISA, to the Johannesburg Stock Exchange, to Strate, to Investec, and to ICAP. Now, ladies and gentlemen, this now marks the beginning of our closing. So, as I said, we've had a very, very successful IOSCO conference, and we know that you are going to enjoy the rest of the evening with us. Ladies and gentlemen, just some housekeeping announcements from my side before we do the official closing. I want to remind you that the buses depart the usual spot at the CTICC at 18:30, so that's at 6:30 tonight. Dress code is casual. Ladies, please wear flat shoes. And very importantly, ladies and gentlemen, just to make sure that you're comfortable tonight, do bring something warm. It's a wonderful venue, but we want to encourage you to bring something warm because it is close to the ocean. So that will be lots and lots of fun. And then also, ladies and gentlemen, from my side, I have had such a wonderful conference with all of you, and I want to thank the FSB for inviting me. This has been very, very informative, and I thank you for sharing your time with me. Ladies and gentlemen, I will now hand over to Bert Chanetsa, of course, of the FSB South Africa. Let's give him a warm round of applause as we welcome him on.
Thank you, Joanne. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm glad to see that you're all still here. It has been a long run. We have indeed run the course. The last 5 days have produced much, beginning with the work groups, standing committees, task forces, regional committees, emerging markets committee, Combined Technical Committee and Executive Committee, and finally, the President's Committee. Fundamental decisions respecting the future structure of IOSCO and the funding were made. I can at least say that the work of the 36th Annual IOSCO Conference has been done. Alas, I cannot say that the work of IOSCO is complete. We are still grappling and will continue to grapple with systemic risk. Work will be continuing on sci-fis, G-sci-fis, financial assets of mass destruction that are over-the-counter derivatives, commodity market reform, alternative trading platforms, high-frequency trading, and an activity whose shadow over the financial services is growing. No pun intended, shadow banking. The panel discussions, without exception, were informative and thought-provoking. For an event to be successful, a number of people have to come to the party. Indeed, it is a team effort. I would like to thank the leadership of IOSCO, Jane, Greg, Tajinder, Hans, the IOSCO Secretariat, ASISA, the Johannesburg Stock Exchange, Strate, Investec, ICAP, global conferences for a superlative planning and execution, you put on a good show. All service providers, our Master of Ceremonies, Joanne Strauss, keynote speakers, moderators, and panelists, Ishmael Mamoniat and the team from the National Treasury, FSB staff, our executive officer, Dube Chidi, Norman, Anna, Nobambo, Shamila, Masenye, Victor, and Valencia. You have indeed been great ambassadors and splendid hosts, and to say nothing about your infectious joie de vivre. Finally, the Financial Services Board extends its best wishes to Beijing. Dr. Tong, I don't see you. I trust you're somewhere in the audience. I am certain that you will continue to fly IOSCO's distinct flag high. Colleagues, 2012, all roads lead to Beijing. Dr. Tong, we formally pass the baton on to you. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Bert. Now, ladies and gentlemen, I've been asked to announce the video, which will now be played. I just want to make sure with our technical team, we want to show you a little bit of a glimpse into what you can expect in Beijing. So let's please roll on the video.
Throughout the ages, the city of Beijing has captivated the world's imagination. Thousands of years, countless emperors, the rise and fall of dynasties, all have left their mark on this magnificent capital of the Far East. Today, Beijing has already transformed itself into a world-class metropolis with a diverse mix of tradition and modernity, the ancient and the cutting edge, an exciting swirl of different peoples and nations, and the rich cultural fruits culled from the best of the Eastern and Western worlds. As the host city of the 37th IOSCO Annual Conference, Beijing is eager to celebrate this great exchange of ideas, information, and goodwill. To visit Beijing is to step into the exciting realm of China's living history. The Great Wall, one of the seven wonders of the world, winds across thousands of miles and has witnessed thousands of years of Chinese history and connects visitors today with the ancient glory of the country's imperial past. The Forbidden City, in the center of Beijing, is a 15th century palace so magnificent it continues to define the shape of the city even today. With 9,000 mansions of exquisite detail and design, it is the most striking and most complete manifestation of China's traditional palace architecture. There's also the Summer Palace, the grandest and most well-preserved of China's royal imperial gardens. There's the Temple of Heaven, a holy altar that lends itself to meditations on the nature of time and space, heaven and earth, man and the universe, creation and eternity. Despite the grand scale of Beijing's more magnificent landmarks, it is the small alleyways, or hutongs, that form the true skeleton of the city. Exploring the depths of Beijing's hutongs is to take a step into the ever-flowing stream of the city's constant development. Beijing may have been built as a capital for kings, but it is filled today with an exciting vibe of entertainment and the arts. Modern Beijing provides a wide array of leisure and entertainment. Whether you want to experience traditional Chinese tea culture, have a night at the opera, or check out the local sports scene, this is a city that truly has something for everyone. Beijing also boasts a vibrant nightlife with lively bars, classy lounges, terrific nightclubs, and a promise that the city never sleeps. Beijing also has all the modern conveniences and facilities for world-class business and living. A dynamic transportation system incorporates a well-developed and multifaceted network of airports, train stations, subways, light rail, expressways, side roads, and hutongs. It's also fun to experience Beijing by bicycle, and bicycles are available to rent at many hotels and tourist attractions. If you like shopping, you'll love Beijing. In its unique range of markets and shopping districts, you'll find charming roadside vendors and dazzling malls selling everything from classic Chinese trinkets to glamorous world-class brands. With low prices and a vast selection of all kinds of high-quality products, Beijing is a heaven on earth for shoppers from around the world. For food lovers, Beijing is, of course, home to the world-famous Peking duck, but it's also known for a wide array of delicious delicacies and local snacks. This year's annual meeting will be held at the National Convention Center, located right next to the Bird's Nest, Water Cube, and the Olympic Park. The Convention Center provides easy access to the Intercontinental, Crowne Plaza, and NAC hotels. Now, let's take a look at China's capital markets. The world's largest emerging market has made tremendous achievements over the past 20 years of development. As of the end of 2010, there were 2,063 companies listed on the Shanghai and Shenzhen stock exchanges, with a total market value of 26.54 trillion RMB, or two-thirds of China's GDP. There are about 580,000 active institutional investor accounts, with over 188 million investment accounts in total nationwide. Also under CSRC's supervision are 106 security firms, 164 futures brokerages, and 63 fund management companies. China has fulfilled its commitment made upon accession to the WTO to open its securities sector and has taken the initiative in implementing Qualified Foreign Institutional Investor, QFII, and Qualified Domestic Institutional Investor, QD, programs. As the host and organizer of IOSCO's conference in Beijing, CSRC is counting down the days to this exciting meeting in May 2012. Preparations for the conference are already underway, and we know that our efforts will make IOSCO's meeting a terrific success.
2012,
CSRC will also be celebrating its 20th birthday. Over the past two decades, our mission has been to protect investors' interests, minimize systemic risk, and ensure that the market is fair, effective, and transparent. As China's capital market becomes more tightly connected to the international capital market, CSRC will continue to strengthen cooperation with our counterparts around the world. it is our great honor to host the IOSCO Annual Conference in 2012. We look forward to meeting with friends and colleagues to discuss post-crisis financial regulation, map a blueprint for IOSCO's organizational reform, all the while sharing with you the richness of Chinese history and culture, and the exciting development of China's economy and capital market.
那时的北京城一定会更加令人瞩目，而那一刻就是我们大家共同的金色时光。北京，欢迎你。
So, welcome to Beijing. And I just want to give an example that one social event will that be on the Great Wall, we will have a cocktail in the sunset. So, is that attractive? I do believe so. So after such a detailed video, I don't think I should go through another introduction. But as we believe that a successful conference should be not only about marvelous social events and comfortable accommodations, but also it's really a fruitful process about sharing the experience and knowledge about the relationship life that we experienced every day. So can I invite all the participants to participate such kind of preparation work? We would like to set up a website which will be iosco2012.cn, and please drop a message to say what is the most interesting topics and which jurisdictions experience are the most interested lessons that you would like to learn, and drop us a message just on that website, and we will combine all the feedbacks and to design the program as it should be. So that is, again, as I said, Beijing is ready to shine, and we are ready to share. So see you in Beijing.
Fantastic. Ladies and gentlemen, I think we are all very excited about Beijing, so thank you so much for that invitation. Ladies and gentlemen, that concludes this afternoon's proceedings. So, last announcement, as I said before, 6:30, the buses depart from the usual place at the CTICC. From my side, thank you so much again for being a wonderful audience, and we'll see you tonight at the party. IOSCO 36th Annual Conference is now closed. Thank you so much again to the FSB and all our sponsors. Have a wonderful afternoon, and see you tonight, ladies and gentlemen. Goodbye.